Hello, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's the 25th of March 2009, and I'm your host, Harrowood Fenton. Tonight, we're looking at a series of stories from around the world. First off the list, the world economic situation, with a major announcement from the US Federal Reserve of the intention to buy up $1 trillion worth of US Treasury bonds, and recent announcements by the Chinese government suggesting that they would like to create a new reserve world currency to replace the US dollar. Already since the announcement last week of the creation of the intention to buy the US government bonds, the share markets have suddenly picked up, and we've already had spin doctors reporting that there's going to be a recovery. It looks like disinformation and spin to me. But who knows? The situation is very volatile, and there's clearly a lot of tension on the whole economic front with a lot of uncertainty. Other stories that we'll be looking at tonight include the latest developments in the WikiLeaks story. The story broke last week with a publication by a Danish free speech site of the purported Australian ACMA blacklist of banned internet sites. Now, this list was initially denied by the government. They said it wasn't actually the correct list. This week, they've kind of reversed that claim, and they're now saying it is the correct list. And in the latest breaking news, we've discovered that the owner of that site, or one of the administrators of that site in Germany, has actually been raided by the police. So we'll be getting into that story. We'll also be getting into some Australian news, which we will take a particular look at it because it looks very suspicious to us in terms of our experience with changes in law based on convenient events. And I'm talking here about the bikie laws, which are now have been proposed to go nationwide, initially started in South Australia. But with the recent events, which included the fatal bashing of a bikie member in Sydney Airport, there is now a huge amount of pressure to bring in draconian new laws to legislate against bikie gangs. So we'll be getting into that story and a number of other world events which we'll be covering during the show. So, welcome to Truth News Radio, and welcome to the show, Josh Jackson.
G'day, Harold. How are you, mate?
Look, I'm good. You know, I'm still fighting the fight. We're still sort of hurtling along here in this sort of, you know, blur of history that we're kind of living through, trying to survive it.
No, it is. This is a very, very important part in history. We are right now seeing the collapse of the American Empire. I have no doubt in that. I mean, this follows all the hallmarks that we see in Rome, the fall of Rome, the fall of Soviet Russia. You know, this is all carbon copy stuff. All the key indicators are pointing in the same direction. And I mean, this isn't only the fall of the American Empire, as sad as that is, but it's also the fall of the, big time in England. The British is not really an empire anymore, but it's definitely, I think they're in deeper trouble than America at the moment.
Yeah, I think we've got to try and understand what's really happening here with this current situation. It's changing so fast. We had the story last week of the US Federal Reserve buying up $1 trillion worth of bad debt. Now, that bad debt included US Treasury bonds and also mortgage debt. The story I have here from Voice of American News says that the Federal Reserve plans to buy up $300 billion in government bonds, and they also intend to purchase $750 billion of additional mortgage-backed securities. Mm. So this is valueless. I mean, and that's why they're saying it's equivalent to printing money, because they're buying bad debt and they're buying treasury bonds, which are very they're kind of on the nose because they have no interest yielding capability.
Yeah.
Now the interesting thing is about this is that the Chinese have also been buying treasury bonds like there's no tomorrow, and you know, and it's very interesting that we now have the Chinese saying that that we need a new reserve currency, because doesn't it begin to seem like maybe there's a bit of a war going on here, a bit of a struggle for power?
Oh, absolutely. But you know, when they say the Chinese, I really feel there is more of a global elite push for the IMF to basically take control of the reserve currency. So we have, instead of one country, we now have privately owned company, which is comprised of, you know, under the cloaks of an agreement between a whole heap of nations, to build a new reserve currency, and this is getting very, very close to a one world currency. Very close.
Well, they are actually proposing a new currency, as I understand it. They're not actually saying we should make, say, the Chinese currency a new currency. They're actually saying we need a new currency, and we know it's not just the Chinese. We know that there's a whole bunch of bankers, central bankers, out there who want this to happen. Now, but of course, at the moment, what's happening is the U.S. government is opposing it. Our own fearless leader, Kevin Rudd, is opposing it. But from what I've seen of Mr. Rudd's performance in the past, he plays a game. He plays a game of strategy. He might be opposing it one week, and then he'll support it, you know, if it's strategic. At the moment, you see, at the moment, America is still strong in principle. But once America starts to really collapse, I don't think you'll find Kevin Rudd will be dancing to quite the same tune.
Oh, absolutely. I've already seen Kevin sort of be a bit flip-floppy on this topic of printing. I mean, we're printing money right now, and the Bank of England's printing money. He doesn't know what he's talking about, Kev. You know, he really doesn't. And neither does Barack Obama. None of them do. No one knows really what's going on apart from the elite banking organization and true fiscal conservative. When it comes to understanding what's going on, you really have to study the basics of economics and really take, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Austrian school of economics. And you know, it really isn't hard to predict, especially when you look out through history, you know, only as far back as the 80s when the Russians fell and the mafia took over there. You know, you really have the same things happening again. So it's important to I'd urge everybody to go and study a little bit of Austrian economics.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Josh. And one of the predicted outcomes of the latest strategy from the Federal Reserve is hyperinflation. Now, there was an interview last week on ABC Radio, and I can just quote a couple of people who were speaking on there. And one opinion is that this is going to lead to a Zimbabwe-style out-of-control inflation. And in the interview, the interviewer says, are you saying that this could happen? And the expert that they've got saying, I'm not saying it could happen. I'm saying it is going to happen.
Well, it's like a law of physics. The laws of economics isn't that they are laws. You know, when for instance, if I just all of a sudden made, Ford cars $1 each, made them really cheap. And it's the same as making money really cheap by lowering interest rates. If I made them $1 each, all of a sudden everyone would be lying outside of Ford dealerships buying up Fords. And you'd buy two or three or ten. You know, you just buy as many. And of course, then every industry would all start pouring money towards the Ford company. You know, everyone would start for jobs and everything would be going towards Ford. And this is exactly what's happening with the financial sector, is that all these jobs, especially in England, they have got no more exports. You know, every job has gone to the financial sector. They're just pushing paper around, and now they're realizing that, you know, they really don't have any sort of anything solid to stand on if the financial system collapses.
And one of the other problems we've got is this delayed effect. Every time you make a change to interest rates, there is an effect down the line. It's like trying to steer a really large ship, and you know, you make a small change to the rudder. It takes a lot of momentum for that effect to be converted into a change of direction, and then if you want to change it again, it takes a long time to change it. So this is the problem with hyperinflation, is that once the economy starts to pick up, it'll start to run out of control. And it says here that in the interview that I'm just quoting from, it says the Fed is almost bound to create excess inflation at the back end of the cycle, almost inevitably, because they are fighting a deep recession potential here with a very aggressive and unorthodox monetary policy. They will want to be absolutely certain that the economy is recovering before they remove the stimulus. And if they wait till they're sure, by definition, they are late, because monetary policy works with a long lag. So it's part of the dynamics of this system, which is really crude. I mean, there is nothing. It's not like heart surgery. Okay, it's not like some absolutely precise thing where they go in and fix it. It's like a sledgehammer for a thumbtack. Okay.
Absolutely. You're spot on. And hyperinflation, folks, is absolutely on the cards. And if you guys don't know what hyperinflation is, look at the Weimar Republic of Germany, look at Zimbabwe. It is basically the debasing of a currency. You know, back in the Roman days, they would when they started running out of cash from bribing all the poor with social welfare, you know, giving them free bread and stuff, basically the Romans ran out of cash. And so that you would see the same thing there happening by the way of getting the silver coins and putting heaps of like nickel in there and just having one little strip of silver around the edge. And this is the exact same thing as just printing money out. The exact same thing as printing money, except now it's just printing money. So it's a devaluation of the dollar, which is mass excess of money. Money will just be everywhere. Paper will just be flooded all around you, and bread will cost you, you know, $3,000. And that's no joke. And this is why, you know, a lot of very important people in the economic circles have all said for years, diversify your savings with precious metals, with property, with firearms, with you know, any hard asset and seeds and food.
Firearms, that's an interesting one. Well, yeah, I mean,
well, look, you know, you got to when things turn to shit, you know, people.
Yeah, I guess there's some. there's some.
But this, I mean, that's more of the American side of things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
of course.
But that's what a lot of people say. You know, if you have a farm with food and everyone else is starving, you know what? You know who's coming. You got to protect yourself, right?
Yeah, it's a different, it could be a very different world that we're going to see. I mean, look, I'm not going to predict. I'm not going to try and predict what's going to happen. You know, we could just go through a blip and go back into another phase of bull market for a few years, and then there could be another massive, massive crash.
Oh, it's so ridiculous, Harold. Turn on the news
could stabilize
and you see
for a while, you know.
Yeah, I turned on the news and we had one little bull day, you know, Virgin jumped up 20% or something, and everyone's like, is this the end of the recession?
It's just quite incredible, isn't it, that they're talking about so soon after it started, that they're talking about at the end of it. It's really quite laughable, isn't it?
It's absolutely, it really makes the news look foolish, you know, because honestly, I can't believe that people would actually believe that. Oh, maybe I can. But anyone with a little bit of historical education really understand exactly what you said before. The economy is like one big, massive cruise liner. You know, you can't just, it's not just one day up. Oh, there we go. We're turning the other way now. It is literally a very, very slow thing. And that's why inflation is such an insidious little tax, because they start printing money to basically steal your savings, because
Yes.
your savings then become worthless, you know. So, and inflation happens so slowly because you print the money. It takes 2 years for everyone, for it to filter through the economy and everyone to realize, sort of, you know, it's an amazing thing, inflation, actually. It's amazing how it slowly bread just creeps up. It's got a mind of its own, almost like, you know, hey, there's more money around, everything sort of slowly goes up in price. It's amazing.
Well, you know, we've had the predictions from people like Gerald Celente, who is basically predicting the greatest recession, the greatest depression, food riots, revolution, and we've got this sort of ebullient, puff pieces that that talk about everything kind of, you know, coming back to normal again. But you know, so we've got extremes. And the thing about when you have extremes in terms of predictions, it makes everyone think, it kind of makes everyone feel confused and kind of like sort of stunned and unable to think. And I do think that that phenomenon that you have of wildly different predictions and statements on the media is something you've got to be aware of, that this is part of a deliberate kind of smoke screen that's going on. You know what? Because what will happen regardless of what they say. And the people that seem to have their heads screwed on, that have been following this for a long time, are talking about a trend here that seems, you know, when you've been studying it as you have, Josh, like you sort of strip away a lot of that hype and a lot of the excessive statements, and you can start to see, well, these are the real trends. And you know, we are moving towards a complete change in world order. That I think, folks, that I think I can guarantee. Now, will it be a Orwellian world government
Superstate.
where we're stripped of our rights and forced eugenics and population reduction and all the horrors of, you know, technological mass extermination? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it will stabilize again and everything will sort of be okay. You know, I've got my fingers crossed that it's going to be more like that, because you know, I don't want to predict horrendous outcomes for humanity. I really don't want that. Like I'd like to be able to continue into my, you know, through my life doing what I'm doing now and continue to reach people and continue to basically put forward the values of truth, of a free society, of creativity, all the things that we value. And you know, if we do go into that extreme scenario, well, probably won't be able to do this. So as much as I, you know, as much as I stand by a lot of the predictions about this that look rather bleak, these are not things that I want to happen. And I will
But
be
you
so
can't.
happy if we can avoid it. I will be so happy.
But at the same time, if you know, you're in an airplane and the pilot has a heart attack, you're not going to sit there thinking, oh, you know, hopefully we can get through this. I'm hoping we won't. No, you're going to try and, you know, warn everybody,
Well, that's right.
scream out,
We
is there a
have to
pilot
take
on
action.
board? Is there someone here that can take control of the plane?
Yeah.
Or you know, can we restructure this thing? You know, it's futile for people, and this is the typical of a well-fed, well social, welfare country where people sort of just close their eyes and go, no, no, it'll be fine, because they haven't really felt true, you know.
Well, it's the pseudo democracy, the pseudo affluent society, the comfortable slavery that we live in, keeping us very sort of docile.
Honestly, folks, what I really feel needs to happen is that people need to turn off their televisions, and they need to study history. They need to understand that this is an exact carbon copy happening again. And yeah, the details are different. And people say, oh, this has never happened again. It's just a bigger empire now. It's just a bigger empire. And the same things, the exact same things with private mercenary armies and big empires and big armies and control of the civilizations. And, it really is the same as Rome, the same as all of the big empires. And, monetarily wise, it's pretty new in terms of the vastness. But what we need to do is start being educated, because the educated class.
Sometimes people ask, when you give them a lot of this information that's a bit counter to what they know, and then they sometimes ask, well, what use is it to me knowing this? What can we do? Now, a really important point here is that what you can do is not necessarily what you have to do right now. It might be what you have to do in 3 years. Because there'll come a time when you're going to be forced to make decisions. And if you're informed now about what's going on, you'll make decisions that are better informed. Okay?
Exactly.
And you won't necessarily go along with, let's backtrack. Let's wind the clock back to 1933. Okay? The Great Depression was well underway. Mm-hmm. And as that Great Depression swept around the world, what did you find? You saw the rise of militarism and the word fascism, which was coined in that decade by Mussolini, and then spread to Germany, Spain, and then, of course, already you had in the Soviet bloc, you had their own form of totalitarianism. You had this worldwide kind of play. You had it in Japan as well, with the militarism that the empire in Japan that led to just absolute atrocities against people in China and Korea and places, all within this time frame. Now, why was that? These are all connected. These times of great economic collapse bring about social changes. Can lead to violence, extreme threats to humanity. Now, people can stop it, though. People can see it happening, and they can stop it. They could have stopped it in Italy. They could have stopped it in Germany. People tried. Now, that we've got much more education now.
We're very lucky in this day and age, because we have vast networks of communication.
Yeah. So if they start talking about putting people in camps... Okay, if you start to hear on the news that all of these people who are in tent cities now across the United States, if you start hearing stories that for their own safety they're going to be put in camps, you better watch out, okay? Because that step will signal the beginning of the new phase, okay? And if they do it in America, they're likely to do it here too on a smaller scale. You've already seen these increasing powers that have been given to government, the nanny state, to completely take over the individual, to completely subvert your freedoms.
Well, and there was a Today Tonight story the other day about on Channel 7 about, do we need a martial law like style, like American style, to protect our families? And they had these black, stormtroopers knock down this door with submachine guns.
No, you're kidding me. No, this was on Australian commercial television.
On Australian commercial television. And I didn't actually catch the story, but that was the promo. And then we see now with these bikies hits, which we'll talk a little bit about later.
We need to get a link to that story. Let's chase that story up.
If anyone's out there that can find that story on Today Tonight, it was 2 days ago. And then we have this story where they said, this was in the newspaper today, police do nothing while bikies smack each other or something like that. And then they say, ill-prepared police.
Bikie gang members,
A police in the UK airport at Heathrow. They showed one in the New York airport. And then they showed the Australian police with no gun. You know, the one in the UK had full submachine, full machine gun.
Yeah.
The ones in America had full machine gun, full black riot gear, like just standing there, just really aggro on, full of crazy, aggression.
Absolutely.
And they said, this is what we need in Australia to stop bikies hitting each other. I mean, as if that's an everyday occurrence. Bikies smack some other bikie in the head and kill him. Like, look.
We'll be covering the bikie story in a moment.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into that. I think we're just going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with some more stories in relation to that. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, we're back on the air, and you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia with Herewood Fenton and Josh Jackson. Okay, well, we're moving on with stories from tonight's World Roundup. Now, we were just getting there into the bikie gang issue, and this is a story that has been in the news this week. Now, it's one that I find very interesting. And when I first heard the story, I was somewhat skeptical of the way it was immediately connected to the need for legislation to give the government more powers. Now, the story, I'll just read you the story as it was released originally. This is probably from a few days ago. New South Wales Premier Nathan Rees is today contemplating adopting his South Australian counterpart Mike Rann's anti-bikie laws after a man was killed during a vicious brawl between Hells Angels and rival Comancheros gang members at Sydney Airport on Sunday. The South Australian laws allow the government to declare bikie gangs to be prohibited criminal groups and police to arrest their members for criminal association. Okay, now the interesting thing about that is that when the story actually broke, and I did hear it on the radio when it first broke, there were some interesting aspects to it. First of all, the biker gangs were actually fighting in the airport lobby area, full of security cameras, right, and normally full of security and police. It's the airport. It's probably the most... Wouldn't you have to say, Josh, it's probably the most policed place in our society? I mean, it is the one place where you shouldn't be able to get away with anything because it's just so heavily policed.
It's like bikies going into the forecourt of a prison and beating up someone. I mean, it's the only other place in society that has full body scanners and cops swarming everywhere all the time, CCTV cameras everywhere. I mean, it is so highly surveilled. It is pretty much like, a prison. I mean,
it's extraordinary
in terms of its surveillance and its policing.
And apparently they were using the aluminium rods that are used for the ropes that herd people into the check-in counters. They were using those and whacking this guy over the head with them. And he ended up dying. Now, okay, some interesting points to make here. The guy who was killed was actually wanted by the police, believe it or not, because he had stabbed a policeman a week before. Okay, to me, that's a very important piece of information. Okay, he had stabbed a policeman in the arm a few days before this occurred. Okay, so he was already, he wasn't just a bikie member. He was actually wanted by the police. Okay. Second thing is, none of the
pretty full-on cry.
None of the CCTV footage had any was of any use. They said they couldn't recognize anything.
Yeah, I mean,
can you believe that?
Suspect. And then I read in the news article today. I've forgotten it was a Herald or something. It said, the Qantas cameras are the CCTV cameras weren't set up to actually see anyone's faces.
That is the most incredibly ridiculous of all the absurd things I've heard. You know, recently that's got to be this week's top stupid statement from the media, hasn't it?
We should actually have a segment, top stupid statement of the media of the week.
We should have an award section, shouldn't we?
Oh, look, it is, you know, a friend of mine joked today. He said, "Oh, Josh, you're going to be, you know, walking around with for years to come with T-shirts saying the airport bikey beatings was an inside job." And well, I sort of had a giggle because my 9/11 was an inside job shirt. But
I have no stake in whether it was an inside job or not, you know, and I personally don't really care. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just got all of these anomalies about it. And, you know, we don't have to go down that conspiracy.
I don't care. That was a joke. But of course. It definitely stinks of some sort of hit job and of police foreknowledge and of some sort of political.
Yeah, opportunism. It's opportunism.
Absolutely.
At the very least, they're just milking it for all it's worth to try and just ram through some new, you know, human rights suppression.
Well, it took 2 days because I said straight away, why aren't the news talking about the 22 policemen that are there, at the airport, 22 federal cops? Why aren't they saying, why didn't they step in? It took them 2 days to say, why didn't the police step in? And then, of course, the spin on that was, well, they're ill-equipped to handle it, and they just sort of had to stand back until backup came, and then it was too late. Everyone got away. But, I mean, this is absolute rubbish.
Look, there's a long history of bikie gangs basically being, and I've heard this, you know, from people who know a bit about it, is that the bikie gangs basically run the drug trade in Australia with, you know, the police turning a blind eye. They work with the police through the corrupt channels. Okay, the whole system of illegal drugs, bikie gangs, and police is one giant kind of web of corruption. And I really think that people need to open their eyes to the information that's available out there and not be bamboozled by cheesy television shows like that one that the Underworld was that what it was called, Underworld, the one from Melbourne.
The Underbelly.
Yeah. Look, that's a complete fantasy. Okay, that television show was a fantasy entertainment. Okay, that is part of what the media tries to do in their damage control and creating the perception of, you know, the bad guys and the good guys. You know, the bad guys are the ones that deal the drugs and kill the people, and the police are the good guys that try to catch them, you know, and we're all supposed to believe that, you know, and they allow for maybe one corrupt cop, you know, there's always one, but it's only one, he's a bad apple and he gets caught. And so, the bad cop got caught.
It's kind of interesting,
that the police actually, you know, the good guys.
When the Underbelly season one, there was just no corruption in the police force. They were all good guys.
I know. Maybe I did watch that. I was quite amazed. Yeah, I was.
But season two, right?
Okay, that one I have not seen.
It goes right back to the 70s. It's a prequel. And yes. Basically,
another law from television fantasy propaganda is it's okay 30 years ago to depict police as corrupt. That is actually sanctioned.
You know, in the 70s, everyone, the federal police, all of them are all bought and paid for. They all get these kickbacks from the drug dealers.
Yeah.
But, you know, season one, of course, you know, every cop's absolutely legit, totally good.
I know. Like, you know, we're just such a wonderful society now, you know. We're just so evolved. We're so advanced. It's just, you know, the evolution of humanity is just incredible. Yeah,
but we are digressing. But the main point here, folks, with this bikey thing is that A, they're going to push for police to have automatic weapons, hardcore automatic weapons, day in, day out, just standing around. Now, this is to get you used to seeing that, because everyone travels. Everyone travels all the, you know, most people, they'll go down to Adelaide or, you know, Melbourne, or, you know, they'll fly once or twice a year. So you'll get used to seeing, hey, there's a guy standing there in a full on, you know, hardcore Kevlar outfit with a machine gun. And you sort of go in black, you know, stormtrooper outfit, and you go, oh, yeah, well, that's that they're protecting us. And then you'll see it more and more. You'll start seeing it in just normal police on the streets, and this is the sort of the slow progression towards a police state, and it's always used by fear. I mean, the police are saying, I saw a headline in the news, what, are you safe at the airport anymore? Is your family safe at the airport? I mean, it's so absurd. I mean, how long has it been? 20 years and some guy gets beaten up at the airport by some rival gangs? I mean, they weren't even going after normal, you know, random citizens. They were going after a hit. You know, this absurdity that it's ever going to happen again in the next 10 years is so crazy.
But I have a question. You know, how does one – okay, you have legislation to ban bikie gangs. Okay. It all sounds good, doesn't it? Oh, we're going to ban bikie gangs. How do you define a bikie gang? I mean, what is the definition of a bikie gang, please?
And this is what the Council for Civil Liberties have brought up, is that this is far too vague.
There's a little bit of clicking going on in your mic, Josh. Sorry to interrupt that. You might have maybe a wobbly stand there or something. I'm just getting a few clicks coming through. Excellent. Sorry. Please continue.
You're right. So this is what the Council of Civil Liberties are going on about, is that the outlawing of biker gangs is now on the table. Now, everyone, when you think of a biker gang, they're big, rough guys that, you know, smuggle heaps of drugs and prostitution. And
well, apparently one of them works for the RTA.
Well, the head guy works for the RTA, right? But
I thought that was pretty amazing.
The fact of the matter is, most bikies, 99%, and that's why they have this... I think it's 1%. A lot of them have got badges that say 1%, because 1% of bikies are, you know, smuggle drugs and sex slaves and all the rest of it. Now, it is it's crazy to say we need to outlaw biker gangs, because this is again playing on people's insecurities of feeling fearful that, oh, biker gangs, they're all bad. Next thing, it'll be just gangs, because some cabramatta gang. Okay, so all of a sudden, a group of people culminating on the street.
Look, yeah, the end result is associations of people are banned. I mean, that's it. That's where this leads to. That's the only way it can go in the end. That's the only outcome. Hello,
it is, and this comes. This comes on the heel of our economic catastrophe. And, folks, Australia isn't, totally shielded from this.
No, there may well be angry groups who've got, you know, who want to protest, you know, and have some genuine, legitimate anger. And with these laws going through to ban groups, they'll just slide it around and point that at, you know, an anti-war group. An anti, you know, anything group. They'll do it once, you know, it's so easily, it's just so close. I don't think a lot of people understand how close we are to this being manipulated into pure fascism. And that's the only reason we're talking about it on the show, folks. Because, you know, like we don't love bikies. You know, I know most bikies, these really, you know, gang ones, they're not nice people. We're not trying to protect bikies any more than we're trying to protect pedophiles when we talk about the internet laws. We know that pedophiles are, you know, sick people, okay? And we don't love them, you know, okay? You know, we're not bleeding hearts who sort of care about the bad people. We just are looking at the coldly and logically at the thought process behind these people who are trying to use any ruse, any reason they can to bring in outrageous restrictions on our freedom.
Yeah, that's spot on. And they have an easy job of it right now because of the mal-educated mass. You know, through the public school educated mass that really don't have a clue about history, who think that it could never, oh, it happened to Germany because Germans were evil.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, yeah, you could say that.
No,
yeah.
You know, that, and it's just not true. Yeah. Germans
absurd.
Were just like you and me, were just like, you know, I mean, yeah, they had a lot of child abuse pre those years. Systematic sort of, you know, it was fashionable just to hit your kid around the ear and never hug them and stuff like that. And a few generations later, you get this sort of, you know, people that could cause genocide. But apart from that, you literally, you know, you don't have, they're all people. We are all people. And we basically, it can slide through systems into total tyranny, and it's really important.
We have tolerated in this country virtual martial law being imposed on the top end. Mm. You know, as a people, we tolerated that, and we should have stood up against that. We should have had a revolution at that point. You know, this is what I'm talking about. What I was saying in the previous section about when those moments come, and you know you have to act. Mm. You know, when you see the government legislating to be able to bring troops in to
protect,
you know,
people.
Yeah, to protect people in the name of protection. You know, they take your children away and, you know, manage every aspect of your life, and you have to report to the army. You know you've got a big problem, okay? You know then that you've got to fight against it. You've got to say no. And, you know, if it's a question of who you're going to vote for, well, you vote for the party that doesn't want to do that. If you do have a chance to vote, you know, and unfortunately, we in our country, we consistently voted for the government that was bringing all these things in all through the last decade prior to the Rudd government. We had a population that kept voting John Howard back in, and each time they voted him in, he'd bring in a whole new set of outrageous laws.
And that's how false the whole voting system is. I mean, here is John Howard, the conservative.
Yeah.
Doing the most, you know, unconservative, radical things that Australia has ever seen, and we keep voting him in. Now we're getting
we had our chance. You know, we had our chance a few years ago to make a difference with our vote, because before Rudd became the leader of the opposition, we had that brief period where and I'm having a mental blank here, 2004. Anyway, we had an election. We had a leader of the opposition at that time who had said that he was going to end the war in Iraq. Okay, well, he was just spat on by the Australian population. Okay, you know, failed miserably and was kicked out of the party. So we, you know, anyway, I digress. But what I'm saying is, We have the ability sometimes to make decisions, and we need to be standing up at this point about the bikie laws. You know, it's hard because obviously we need to look at it, see what it is, understand what it is, right? Don't support it. Don't tacitly support it. Don't be persuaded to think that this is in any way really geared towards your protection. No.
Don't be thinking that all bikies are going to go to the airport to slaughter someone else in the next 6 months. I mean, you know, the airport is perfectly safe.
Absolutely. And on that note, look, we need to move on with some more stories. We'll just take a very quick call sign break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, we are back on Truth News Radio Australia. That's truthnews.com.au, the radio show which goes behind the lies and the deception to, you know, attempt to get a little closer to the real reality that we live in. We don't say that we get there, you know. We're trying, and we're obviously providing a different slant on it to others. And you know, we have intent to get you there. We'll do the best we can. Next story for tonight is the WikiLeaks story. Now, the story broke last week with the report that the ACMA blacklist, that's ACMA stands for Australian Communications and Media Authority, blacklist had been published on a Danish website, that's wikileaks.org, and it caused a bit of a stir. There was a response from the government, from Stephen Conroy, and that's the communications minister. And, you know, it was a rather blustering kind of response. He said that, you know, it wasn't the correct list, but it was terrible that it was released anyway. And the people who released it should be very worried because they might get a visit from the Australian Federal Police. And anyone who publishes this kind of information is breaking the law. And, you know, a whole lot of bluster. And quite amusingly, the owners of WikiLeaks.org responded with their own retort. And they said that if the Australian government tried to have a go at them, they would have legal redress and they would pursue them with their own laws, because in their country, freedom of speech is enshrined and protection of sources is enshrined in their law. So it would be illegal under their system to have any form of coercion applied as to the source of the leaked information.
It's an amazing story, Harold. And I mean, I've been following their Twitter, WikiLeaks Twitter page.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, I haven't been myself. I should. Yes.
It's a great little thing. I mean, they basically tweeted all the way through their raid in Germany. I mean, here is basically WikiLeaks is an amazing organization. In fact, it's getting them a lot of press, this, so it's actually a good thing.
It is.
In fact, their page is overloaded by readers and is down at the moment.
Ah, right. So, okay, we can't actually access it right now. It's a shame, yeah. I mean, look, the principle of WikiLeaks, you've really got to understand what WikiLeaks is and then what our government is trying to make it out to be, okay? Because they are now... They've raided one of the members' homes. They're basically accusing this organization of promulgating, you know, pornography, and it's totally absurd. Okay, this is a freedom of speech organization promoting the highest values of universal human rights. They are standing up for us all. Do not be persuaded by the government's propaganda campaign to think that, oh, they are actually publishing pornography.
Oh, it's absolutely demented to think. Here's an organization that's got a list of, you know, a heap of links that it's been leaked from the blacklist. To think that that's all the child porn on the net, you know, that's it. You know, the Australians' blacklists have just saved us all from it. You know, I mean, I've been on the net my entire life and I've never seen any child pornography. I mean, I've never bumped across it. I use the net like crazy, and it's, you know, to think that, ooh, the Australian, you know, government is really protecting us by, with the, and then to say that, You know, because there must be a lot of it out there, right? But instead of actually arresting these people that create this filth, they go around blocking it and then bringing down people like WikiLeaks, who stand up, like you said, for one of the core values of our free society, which is freedom of speech. Because it's not only pornography that they're blocking, and you can see that by the list. You know, I mean, there's a bloody dentist's page on there.
Yes, and that hasn't been explained as to why that's on there. I think I had read somewhere that perhaps that site had been hacked. But, I mean, you know, the site doesn't have anything bad on it now. You know,
it doesn't matter. So this is the sick thing.
And look, we know
it's
that
it's been hacked. Yes. So, okay, that's okay then. Yeah. No, imagine if that was your business.
And we know that the Thai in Thailand, any criticism of the Thai royal family is put on their version of this blacklist. And you know, it's a slippery slope. You know, I mean, that's just pure political suppression. We also know, folks, that there is a huge amount of pressure from, for example, from the Jewish lobby to basically, you know, criminalize, say, questioning the Holocaust. Now, I'm not a Holocaust denier. I'm not a Holocaust revisionist. But I will defend to the death people's right to have their own opinion on it. Mm. And if they, but you see, that's where it becomes a political tool, a tool of political suppression, because we have precedents where, you know, questioning the Holocaust is criminalized, and therefore, well, they could say, well, any site that talks about it, you know, will be on the blacklist. But you know, there are a lot of sites that where people, you know, on forums say, you know, pose their questions about the Holocaust in the course of discussing many other things, and you could get a whole site taken down maybe just because of that if they didn't like that. That's just an example of what might happen. You know, there are worse things that could happen too. You know, I mean, they've often, you know, compared, say, they talk about global warming denialists. You know, you've heard that phrase, haven't you? And they use that terminology to create an association in your brain between Holocaust denial and global warming denial, so that you think, oh, they're similar. Oh, they're the same type of person, you know. Well, why don't we, okay, well, so denying global warming is bad for society, you know, why don't we put that on the blacklist too, you know, these terrible sites that deny global warming. Does that sound absurd? It sounds absurd now, okay. But, you know, in a couple of years from now, as our society deteriorates around us, these are the scenarios that could play out if they've got the ability to do it. It's so easy for them to do it once they've set up the system. Once they've put the filters into every single ISP and every ISP has to comply, they can, at the stroke of a pen, decide to ban any site they want.
Oh, exactly.
Physically, I mean, ban it.
This is the thing. You know, the governments use people's hatred towards child pornography to basically censor anything that they want. Folks, donate to these people. Get onto WikiLeaks and donate some money. I mean, they're getting flack from a lot of governments, and it's very important that they get supported.
It's very important, and this type of civil disobedience is what we need to do here in this country. Because sometimes you have to bring it to a point of conflict in order to demonstrate the unjust nature of the laws. You know, in India, Gandhi took salt. You know, he took salt from the sea. There was a great salt march, they called it, because there was an unjust, outrageous law. And he did it specifically to provoke a response. I think we've got to do something similar here. We have to do things deliberately that transgress these unjust laws to highlight the injustice, of it.
Yeah. See, this is the thing with our society. We're so well, you know, well bribed by the government through our social security system and we're half of us are getting paid $1,000 each now.
Just to
shut up. I mean, you know, they call it an economic stimulus package, but basically it's just to make us feel safe and that the government loves it.
Just keep your mouth shut and don't criticize the government, huh?
Yeah, use $1,000.
Yeah. Because we're in charge now, huh?
You know, honestly, it's Rudd, Mr. Rudd.
You know, it really is important that people get behind WikiLeaks and spread the story, tweet about it.
Twitter on it.
And send them money, you know, $25, you know. It'll really go a long way to help them with lawyers, and they're really fighting a good fight, and they're getting a lot of press at the moment.
I heartily recommend that. Look, we're going to take a little break for some music, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are back. You've been listening to Amy Allen's Silence is Violence. Amy Allen, by the way, a really exceptional singer-songwriter with a passion for truth. And she was on the Alex Jones show last week. And she was also on the Alex Jones show about 6 months ago, where she was interviewed by Jason Burmis. And she revealed something just last week, which was quite shocking, that within about 2 days after she gave that initial interview on the Alex Jones show, she was savagely beaten by Mexican gang members. And it's just strange timing, you know. I mean, she was with a group of people. They singled her out. They pushed the other ones away, and they attacked her with a crowbar and broke her jaw, and nearly killed her. Right, but she recovered, and she's recording a new album now. But in that interview, she had initially given — that was the first one she'd given — she described how she had been pressured by the CIA and the Department of Homeland Security, because one of her hit songs, which was on MTV, I think in about 2002, was titled Revolution. And this was part of the Patriot Act and the, you know, crackdown that occurred in that time, is that they tried to stop the release of that song because they thought it could provoke, you know, unwanted — absurd, I mean, ridiculous, outrageous, fascistic. I mean, worthy of the Stasi, worthy of Stalin, worthy of Hitler. You know, it's just ridiculous stuff. But anyway, she did reveal that it happened, and then she was bashed, you know, savagely bashed a couple of days later.
God,
could be a coincidence, but it was quite horrific. Yeah. So anyway, look, getting back on track here with our stories for tonight, there's a few more stories I wanted to cover, and then we might cover a bit more local news as well. MP George Galloway was banned from Canada. Now, this again, folks, this is a red warning sign. This is flashing red light. Hello, you know, not good. This is not — Canada is supposed to be a free country, okay? Canada is supposed to be one of the democracies. Remember that word, democracy, okay? George Galloway is a member of the government, okay? He's an MP. He's a sitting MP, okay? There's something very wrong here, okay? There is a YouTube interview, which we'll see on the site when you see the show notes. You can listen to him speaking. You can read up on the story. Canada has really deteriorated over the years, hasn't it, Josh? I mean, we've seen so much coming out of Canada that's really quite alarming. And I used to believe that Canada was one of the better countries.
But it's the same with Australia. I see them moving in the same direction. But Canada's, even going faster than us Aussies now.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd be hard-pressed here to get away with banning someone like George Galloway. I think
this is a British MP, folks.
Yeah. And like, you know, he's been involved in the Gaza relief effort, you know. Like, he was involved in that ship that was trying to get food and supplies to Gaza, that was really just trying to help people survive, you know.
Yeah, these are citizens, folks. These aren't the army.
And he's merely pointed out time and again that Hamas is the elected government of Gaza. And for saying that, they're calling him a terrorist. I mean, this is the logic of fascism. It's nonsensical. You can't try and analyze it too deeply. It's pointless.
No, it's me good, you bad.
Yeah, and you do what we say. And yesterday, and you know, if what we said yesterday is good and today we say it's bad, then you forget about what we said yesterday, you know. If we said yesterday 2 + 2 = 5, and then today we say 2 + 2 = 4, then you just forget about what we said yesterday, okay?
Yesterday we're at war with Oceania.
Yeah. You know.
Yesterday we were,
That's the logic that they want you to follow, because, you know, they say Hamas is a terrorist organization. Well, it's an elected government. And, well, you know, the King David Hotel, 1949, you know, the members of the current elite of Israel's, you know, leadership blew up a hotel and killed 90 people. Mm. One of the worst atrocities in the history of Israel was committed by the Zionists.
Look, and our throw the overthrow of Mossadegh, another democratically elected leader
In Iran,
in
yes, in the
Iran,
early 50s.
In the 50s, it's always, oh yeah, democracy, democracy, that's the big thing that we want to press. But
what about the attack on the liberty?
We don't like who you've chosen, so we're going to have to overthrow you or call you all evil,
So, but, look, anyway, we just urge you to investigate this story. It's important, okay? When countries ban elected leaders of other, friendly countries, we're in trouble.
Because of anti-war demonstrations or assertions, yeah.
And they would love to do it here, by the way. They would love to do that sort of thing here. The Jewish lobby here is very powerful. And, we have to just keep on this. And that's why we're going to keep talking about it here on the show. We're basically sitting here fighting an information war. We have to talk about this. It's juicy to talk about.
This goes back to what you were saying before. I just thought of this before while during that song. When people say, well, what can I do? I know all this stuff what's the point of me knowing it? I can't really do anything. Going back onto that, I think what happens is that when people know, when people have that paradigm shift happen in their mind where they start to see the injustices and the way that news is spun and your eyes are open and when you watch the news, you're like, huh? What happens when education flows through more and more people is that the market for truth, the market for reality in news will become bigger. So this will force news organizations to actually give you some proper news.
And then
for talk radio, because people will start hitting talk radio with some facts and some evidence and some history and some, it'll deliver a market.
And it's also a fantastic opportunity for aspiring journalists, for someone who wants to start their own blog, someone who wants to, join the fray and say something positive. This is your golden opportunity, and we can look at it negatively, we can look at it positively. We can say this is actually now the golden opportunity for new media to spring up.
Absolutely. In fact, if there's a radio producer who's wanting to learn, like a student producer or a veteran producer that wants to help produce this show.
Yeah, we welcome you to come on board and produce for us. Because we, like Josh and I, are pretty time poor. We both work professionally, in 9-to-5 type scenarios, and we don't have enough bandwidth to do the planning and organization we do. We do it because we have to do it. It's just that.
And if someone else wants to pitch in, and also, folks, it's our listeners that also make us aware of certain issues. So if you hear of something that's unjust, if the least you can do is, put a post as a comment.
Yeah, because look, we know a lot of people are listening to this show. I know a lot of people are listening. We're not getting a lot of comments, but a lot of people are listening. Now, what I want to urge is I'd like to see the participation level go up. And that doesn't mean directly, relating to us, but do something, start your own blog, and put a link to us from it. And, we'll link to you, this is how we get stronger. Everyone needs to take some steps.
Yeah.
I think
news I'd like to quickly cover. There was a huge number of bikies. actually talking about bikies, but these are push bikies. Rode through Newcastle nude with a tackle hanging out and all, with 9/11 was an inside job written on their back, all of them. So that was good to see.
I would love to get a photograph of that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if anyone's out there that managed to grab a photo or you've sourced a photo, please send it in to truthnews.com.au. And yeah, so that was good. Another thing I'd like to quickly cover, my girlfriend, she brought home a Clio magazine, another, awful publication. Basically, she opened it up and out fell this DVD. And it was Lifestyles of Fitness was printed on it. And it had this young, gorgeous girl, blonde on the front, with army gear on. And, looking all happy with her hands on her shoulders. And a love heart is printed on there too. See, Lifestyle of Fitness with this young, gorgeous girl with a love heart. And then this headline, ever wondered how fit you need to be to join the Australian Army? And basically it's DVD. Watch a group of six civilians as they're taken through components of the Army's physical fitness and assessment by a real Army physical training instructor. The results, while very entertaining, also provide valuable insight into the unique type of fitness required to be a soldier or an officer in today's Army.
This is a very sophisticated marketing campaign.
This is basically aimed at the fears of young women about their obesity, of their weight, not even obese, just normal, normal women that are totally, absolutely gorgeous but feel that they're overweight. And this is basically marketing at them. And it doesn't say anything about, the army per se until you turn it around. In little tiny writings, it says, for further information, right down the bottom of the fine print, it should be directed to the National Marketing Manager, Defence Force Recruiting National Operations. So here, this is just sick. It's sick.
It is indeed. Very sick. It's sick. It's sick and it's slick. Okay.
It's sick, slick. Yeah.
It's the product of a lot of money was spent on it. That they hired a top advertising firm, a top marketing firm. They probably went through all kinds of, what do they call it? Brainstorming sessions or whatever they do, they charge a lot of money for this kind of stuff. And it's all about how do we psychologically get a hook into young women? We want to get young women in the defense forces. Now, look, the rhetoric about the defense forces, they call them defense forces, but really we are an offense force. Okay, Australia has never had to defend itself. We only ever go and attack people in other countries. Okay, currently there is a huge pressure building for Australia.
Well, they'll
to
debate
increase
that with the Second World War.
Well, okay, you could say that we had a mandate to defend ourselves, but we never actually needed to, did we? I mean, the Japanese, never got close enough to it to actually warrant our defense. They shelled, they shelled Darwin, but the army wasn't even there. That's the ridiculous thing about it.
Yeah,
we wouldn't have been able to defend ourselves in the Second World War because we were too busy chasing the coattails of the empire, the British Empire, sending our troops off to the Middle East, to fight their war. So we're doing the same things now. It's just endless. We did that in the Vietnam War. What are we doing in Afghanistan? And they're talking about how we need to be there. And it was on the news today and they were saying, well, it was one of these most ridiculous, I think it was another candidate for our award of the stupidest statement of the week, because it was one of these bland statements. And I think it came from Mr. Rudd, actually. It was like, well, we just can't afford to let the Taliban be manufacturing, terrorists. We just can't afford to sort of pull out of Afghanistan and let it be a safe haven. That's the word they used. And let Afghanistan once again become a safe haven.
Yet there's been countless news stories about how what is the Australian army doing?
They're guarding opium fields.
They're guarding opium fields. And this isn't just some conspiracy theory. This is mainstream press reporting that our army is protecting opium farmers.
Yeah. It's really important that we're there, folks. Because otherwise these you know, poor opium farmers wouldn't be able to, you know, complete their crop, because the Taliban actually are opposed to opium. Yeah. Yeah, the Taliban actually shut all that down, okay? So it's really important that we stop that. Mm.
And look, again.
And you know, we all know that, you know, so as soon as we pull out, all the terrorists will just migrate to Afghanistan, because, you know, it'd be such a great place to go, wouldn't it, if you're a terrorist? Wouldn't you just immediately want to go to Afghanistan? Mm. You'd say to yourself, damn right. I'm heading to Afghanistan to form myself a little cell there. I mean, look, why would you? It's stupid. Why not go to Pakistan? Okay? I mean, why go to Afghanistan when Pakistan's available?
Look, why go anywhere? I mean,
what's the magic of Afghanistan? I mean, they couldn't even.
No, it's like saying we need more security at the airport because some more bikies could come and beat each other up there again.
In that one spot.
Yeah. You know, they'll go exactly that. That's usually where bikies go and beat each other up, right in the middle of the airport.
I know. I mean,
it's impossible.
We should ban those aluminium poles.
Oh, definitely ban aluminium, poles. Yeah. Look, what I'm saying is that I'm starting to see some really slick advertising coming out of the army, coming out of the defense forces. And this is, again, another red flag for me saying that we are in the downfall of, you know, society. I mean, when we start seeing more and more defense recruits, and look, the other day there was one of the big boats, ships came in, the Navy vessels came in to Potts Point, and even the head sailor there said, the head Marine, he was like, oh, no, well, this is actually a recruitment drive. You know, it wasn't just to show off the boat and, you know, that traditionally that's what they do. They come in and celebrate. No, this is a recruitment drive. More and more recruitment drives coming through. And with this economic downturn and everything, it is really, really important that people make sure that they try to get all their friends who are even vaguely thinking about joining the defense forces to try and stop them, because it is during economic extremes that millions of bodies end up in vast graves. And that's not a joke, folks. I'm not just saying this to try and be sensationalist. This is typical. This has happened over and over and over and over again. Like I said before, it's carbon copy stuff. It's photocopier stuff. It happens societies over and over in history.
But can I just give you an example, which is now confirmed by the Red Cross? Okay. A new story, breaking story again. US, this is what happened in Afghanistan. You know, this is part of what we are involved in, part of what our current government is telling us we have to continue to be involved in. Here is a report from the Red Cross. It's objective, okay? It's not a claim. They've investigated it and they've produce this information. US interrogators attach detainees to collars like dogs and use their leashes to slam them against walls, force them to stand for days wearing only diapers, tied detainees' necks with towels, and threw them against plywood walls. Techniques amounted to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, the report states.
Really?
The report goes further. Prisoners were routinely beaten, stripped, doused with freezing water and loud music, and kept awake for days with their arms shackled above them, wearing only diapers. On a daily basis, a collar was looped around my neck and then used to slam me against the walls of the interrogation room. The man who made these claims says he was also wrapped in a plastic sheet as cold water was poured into my body with buckets. I would be wrapped inside the sheet with cold water for several minutes, then I would be taken for interrogation. One captive said his neck was tied with a towel and then he was repeatedly swung into a plywood wall mounted on his cell. He was placed in a coffin-like wooden box and forced to crouch with his air supply restricted. The stress on my legs held in this position meant my wounds and stomach, in my leg and stomach, became very painful. After that, he was waterboarded by being strapped to a hospital bed. A black cloth was then placed over my face, and the interrogators used a mineral bottle to pour water on the cloth so I could not breathe. Anyway, the report
goes on. But your government loves you. Your government loves you.
Now, we know
governments love people. They wouldn't do something like that.
We know that these atrocities were first committed in Afghanistan, and they experimented with it to see what they could do. Then they took those ideas that they developed in Afghanistan and they applied them in Abu Ghraib, okay? And then they further refined it in Guantanamo. See, what they did in Guantanamo was actually much more scientific and much more controlled, but equally destructive, equally torture, you see. But we've had these endless nitpicking debates about, you know, is it harsh treatment? Is it torture? Look, I'd like to just propose a definition for torture, if I may, okay? Because I've been thinking about this for a few days. Mm. And, okay, what is torture, right? Is the threat of pain or, you know, I had it in my head and I've forgotten the exact words I had. But it's certainly the threat of an assault against one's person. That is actually the nature of torture, folks. That torture isn't actually when they put the cigarette butt into your skin. That's not the torture. The torture is the fear that they're going to do it, right? So if someone puts a gun to your head and you believe that gun is loaded, right, and they pull the trigger, and that is torture. Even if the gun wasn't loaded, even if they don't touch you or hurt you physically in any way, to do that to someone, you'd have to agree, that is an extreme form of torture, isn't it? If you believed that the gun was loaded.
And to think that this is sanctioned by taxpayer money.
Well, they say it's sanctioned because then they say, well, it wasn't really torture. And then they go on these ridiculous like medieval arguments about whether it's really torture. Mm. I mean, these people are totally helpless. They're shackled. They're naked.
Mm.
Mm. They're completely, you know, got hoods over their heads.
Mm.
And they were picking up people like goat herders and anyone that the Afghan, you know, warlords sold to them. And, you know, some warlord would sell them some guy and say, oh, he's a terrorist. You know, the warlords were the one who were attacking the Americans. See, they were shooting missiles at the Americans, and then they'd get a goat herder because they could get this bounty, right? So this is the way it worked. If you're an Afghan warlord, you fire a rocket against an American troop base. You then kidnap a goat herder.
Yeah.
Take him to the Americans and say, he did it. I want my bounty.
Mm. Mm.
God's sake, man. I mean, this is what we are involved in. This is what Australian troops are involved in.
And it is so important. It is so important that people realize that by sitting back, you are exactly like the Germans were that just said, oh, well, I heard that this was happening, but I thought they weren't human. I thought the Jews weren't human. I was told that they weren't human.
Yeah.
You know, this is the exact same thing of people just letting it happen, not being irate, not bringing up talk shows, not starting blogs, to hear that a fellow human being is treated like this is so sickening to my stomach. So sickening because you know why it sickens me, Harold? It sickens me because I feel that my children will grow up in a world where that is the norm.
Well, it's been normalized, you know, like it's been on television. It's been on that ridiculous show, Kiefer Sutherland, yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, Kiefer Sutherland going around, oh, we need to torture him just this once.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
the ticking time bomb. We've
got to find out when the bomb goes off or whatever, you know, it's... It's so irrational and just it basically is just these perverted people playing out their childhood, you know, abuse on other people, really. I mean, that's just generally what it comes down to.
I had a chance to watch Taxi to the Dark Side on the weekend, which is the film produced by an Australian. And I'd really heartily recommend it to anyone listening, if you can get a hold of it. I mean, you can download it via BitTorrent.
I've seen it at the video shop at Video Easy.
Oh, it's at Video Easy. Excellent. I haven't seen it in the video shops, so it's great to know that it is actually available. It's a really important document, and it a lot of the things I just mentioned comes straight out of that film, and it's quite clear that that the people were being tortured even while they were saying that we don't condone torture, you know, and it's just abysmal. It's so heartbreaking, honestly, to watch it, to see the denial from the top-level politicians, to see Dick Cheney kind of having a joke about it, you know, making a joke about, because, you know, they'd keep people standing for like 4 days straight. And if you keep someone standing for 4 days straight, it practically cripples them. I mean, you can end up needing to have your legs amputated by having that done to you. And Dick Cheney made some joke about it and said, I have to stand all day in my job.
Oh, it's sick, isn't it? And you know, how do they make someone stand there for 4 days?
Well, they had them in shackles.
You know, this, again, goes to you talking about the fear of being, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, they worked out how to do this. They had them in shackles so that their hands were above their head and they were in a very small room and they hadn't been allowed to sleep. So they're standing there. And of course, if they fall asleep, suddenly they fall, right? And the shackles then pull on their wrists and wake them up again and cause extreme pain, right? So can you imagine? I mean, this is probably just hard to even imagine the horror of being in that situation, because your legs would be in agony, right? But if you allowed yourself to fall, your wrists and your hands would be in even more extreme pain from being hung. So you'd be going between different forms of agony. And that will send you insane, you see.
We have to be in Afghanistan. We have to, you know, because we don't want more terrorists. Now, who's the terrorist here, folks? Who is it? Is it us? Is it our side? Do you feel good about that?
Well,
your representatives. Tell them to watch Dark Side, Taxi to the Dark Side. You know, burn a copy. Send it right to their post office. Tell them to watch it.
Absolutely. I'm going to just give you a reference for it for anyone listening in case you are familiar, in case you're not familiar with the film. Because of our lack of a producer, I don't have information on hand and I have forgotten some of the key information.
Folks, I'd also urge you all to jump online to truthnews.com.au, support us by simply typing away and giving us some feedback, telling your friends about us, you know, Twittering about us, whatever you do, MySpace, Facebook, and tell them to join in the conversation. We're always welcome new listeners, and we'd love to hear from you.
We certainly would. Now, Taxi to the Dark Side is a documentary narrated by Alex Gibney, and I'm just looking at the imdb.com site here, and wouldn't you know it, they don't have the name of the Australian producer, which is very annoying. You wouldn't happen to remember the name, would you, Josh?
No.
I wanted to give her a plug here tonight.
Is that on IMDb?
They've neglected to actually cite the producer's name on there. Here we go. Here's the Wikipedia site. That should fix that up.
So next week, we're going to be hopefully interviewing some more. We're going to try and get a guy on the radio who...
I've got that information now. Sorry, the Taxi to the Dark Side was produced by Eva Orner, an Australian, and narrated and directed by American filmmaker Alex Gibney. You can hopefully get that from your video store. Do continue, Josh. Yes,
we want to try and get on the radio the guy in Melbourne that is it Melbourne or Perth that runs Truth?
Ah, yes.
Movement Australia?
Well, we have asked Adam Davis to come on the show, and he has agreed, although we haven't had a confirmation of the date and time. So okay. I'm still waiting there on that.
So that should be a good show. And we also want to try and get in touch with the person who tried to get a site blacklisted by Australia's blacklist, internet blacklist. Now, you know a little bit about more about this.
I do believe that there was an Australian involved in this. I know that there's a thread on this on Whirlpool forums. So if you Google Whirlpool forums, you can find out a bit more about it. We'll try and dig up the information and hopefully get it onto the page. And we'll definitely be keeping a close eye on the WikiLeaks story, because I think there's going to be more twists and turns to that. We've got we've got possibly a bit of a scoop coming up, but I can't say any more than that. But we do have someone quite interesting who we're trying to get an interview with. Who, you know, we always look for people who could, you know, break through the wall, you know, the media blockade, as we call it. You'll notice that 9/11 has been the key for kind of like the breakthrough of information, because I think 9/11, when people see the deception involved in 9/11, they're quite willing sometimes to make, you know, to say something, to do something. Quite often they're not, you know, but 9/11 has actually been the trigger for a lot of people to really step up.
A lot of big names. Yeah.
And so 9/11 is still extremely important to us. I really want to emphasize for anyone listening that it's not just a question of like whether you know that 9/11 was an inside job or whether you don't know 9/11 was an inside job, you personally. This is not about you personally. None of this is about, and it's not about the effect that you personally can have, okay? Basically, first of all, it's a matter of principle, right? Secondly, the effect is you don't know what the effect will be. You just have to make sure that you make every effort to communicate this knowledge to people so that they will communicate it to someone else. And beyond that, you don't know what's going to happen. Because I do get a lot of people saying to me, oh, why do you bother with 9/11? Why don't you just move on? You know, people continually have this attitude that it's somehow a waste of time.
Mm.
It's not a waste of time, folks. It's never a waste of time to be trying to redress an injustice. It's never a waste of time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like there are plenty of other injustices like you talked about there, and, you know, exposing every single one of them is okay with me, you know. And to say, oh, well, there's, you know, why bother with that one? Look, all of them are extremely important. And 9/11 for the Western world, for the mum and dad and the gum-chewing teenager, was huge. And it affected all of us massively. And that's why it is important. You know, movies like Taxi to the Dark Side and all that are extremely important also. And getting our soldiers out of Iraq and laughing at such recruitment filth as this lifestyle of fitness DVD is very important. So, I guess we better leave it there.
I think that's a wrap.
Thanks for joining us, folks.
And, it has been a great pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Please stay tuned, because we have some really, really important shows coming up. Well, from Truth News Radio Australia, it's a very, very pleasant good night to you all.
Good night.